All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
Welcome to a special episode of the Behind the Wheel podcast. The car edition. I'm Scott, I'm the marketing director for Koenig Wheels. With me is Joey Redman. Joey is the founder of Wreck Magazine and has been published in over 20 automotive magazines. Additionally, he has built SEMA vehicles for OEs like Hyundai and Ford. Finally, you can find his 10 Things Learned article available on formuladrift.com after each FD event. In case you're new to the podcast, Joey and I get together after each FD round. We briefly run through thoughts and highlights from the event. And this is in the addition to our regular podcast format, so make sure to look out for the next one, which will be after round 6 in St. Louis. For those of you who do follow along, welcome back. Formula Drift had, about 6 weeks or so break? I guess we're rolling back in now. That's cool.
It was a long time.
Yeah, the hiatus that they had here, this is different from other seasons, I think. I don't remember that there being such a long break in the middle.
There always tends to be like one gap in the events that's like longer than the others, I feel like. But
yeah,
I don't know. For some reason, it really like dragged along. Like I just kind of had forgotten a lot of stuff from like event to event.
Yeah, no, I agree. I want to get into your points in a few seconds. But first, I want to grab your overall thoughts from Seattle, or as I like to refer to it, the bumper car round. There was just so many collisions, and I know it came from the slowdown area, which, you know, comes right after that sweeping bank. But, I mean, look, we saw Rad Dan love tap Gucci off the ground. Dirk Stratton mauled Hilbron. Denofa love tapped Hilbron. Then Hilbron kissed the wall, and then Weiss, you know, got him a few moments later. Gucci then again tapped against Dean. Field was into Osbo. Vaughn was into Pollock. It just felt like every time there was another match, there was also another, you know, collision or contact.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, I mean, that makes drifting exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at it where there's only a couple ways you can run courses. And I think Formula Drift has opted from going from this usually where you're high speed at the beginning of the course, and then you're progressively kind of like slowing down or keeping the speed slow, which I think is good because, you know, you've got some guys out there now that are reporting to have 1,500 horsepower. So, you know, how is a guy like Van Kirk with 500 horsepower, right, theoretically, like, ever going to stand a chance if the system's not kind of operating in synchronicity like that a little bit?
Yeah, we just can't help but pick on him and his little power.
Well, he just, you know, he was on the podcast recently, so he kind of came, you know, he was like top of mind there.
Sure. Yeah, no, that was a good episode that we just finished with him not too long ago. It was a good change of pace to kind of get his side of that power thing. If you haven't seen that, make sure you check that out. I thought there were some cool things that came out of Seattle. It was an exciting round to watch, and we got Cameron Moore back. Did not only have a one more time against Castro, but he had a two more time against Castro. A special treat for those watching in the live stream. You had Jeff Jones, who looked good. I mean, I think it was his first top 16 at Seattle, period. On the live stream, did you see the little dance battle that was going on? What was that? Him and Kyle Mohan in the back?
I know, doing Fortnite stuff, which fantastic. Just reinforced how like old and disconnected I am, because I don't all of the Fortnite dances I know are from like soccer player celebrations, and someone's like, "Oh, that's from Fortnite," and I'm like, "Oh."
It was pretty humorous. If you're watching the live stream, it was quite the treat. Go check it out. Let's see your point number 10. Can St. Louis save the 2018 championship chase? So FD's heading to St. Louis Gateway Motorsport Park for the first time.
Yeah.
And the drivers tend to use their experience from previous performances, you know, at the track to help them. But for this round, that will not exist. Because, I mean, maybe some of them came out to some of the street-driven events or some other things, and they've had some time there. But, you know, how they set up the track, that's never been done before for Formula Drift. So they're all going to kind of have to do some sort of reset or something to that effect. I think your point was just that based off how this goes down and how people actually perform, this could change maybe that top five there.
Maybe. I mean, I think right now the championship's kind of in dire straits. Like, you know, if you're following Formula Drift from a championship angle, it's not looking good. So I think St. Louis and like kind of the next event was kind of my push saying, you know, theoretically, it could swing things one way or the other. I don't know how likely it is, but I will say this. You look at a guy Forsberg historically does really well when there's not a lot of track data. I think, you know, he's in the last four times there's been a new track, I think he's podiumed on all four of them. Yeah. I would say maybe an additional advantage for Forsberg over someone, say Osbo, is Forsberg did every street-driven St. Louis event. And I'm 99% sure that Formula Drift is going to run the same course as street-driven. I don't know that for like a fact, but there were Formula D staff, I think, at that last street-driven St. Louis event looking at it. And I also just don't really see enough. I mean, they might run the same track counterclockwise, which is something that's possible. But using that same principle where they're usually going from highest speed to lower speed, I think they're going to run like almost a mirror of the street-driven track. So that's another advantage to Forsberg. Osbo also seems to do really well without a lot of track data. You know, the Warthouse guys obviously do very well everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's just one of those chances where something weird could happen. You could get into a situation where Dean perhaps messes up really early on, and then you get to a point where either Forsberg and Osbo can do the championship. Almost, basically, there's a situation where I think it's more likely than Texas and Irwindale that there could be like a 60-70 point gap between where some of the top three drivers finish.
So your point number nine, Justin Pollock becoming the new king of the Ford Mustang. I mean, clearly doing much better than Chelsea and Vaughn, which are 14th and 15th place respectively.
You know, it's just one of those things that obviously Vaughn kind of garnishes all the Mustang attention.
Yeah.
But, you know, through his marketing efforts and whatnot. But Pollock has been progressing a lot. I think he's getting a lot better as a driver. He looks more interesting. You know, he's got things put together. And I think it was just kind of a comment where he did so well in Seattle, he kind of caught my attention where I hadn't been paying attention to him, I think, as much before. And then, like, on top of him catching my attention, it kind of occurred to me. I was like, hey, like, you know, this dude's really high up in the championship. He doesn't really have a shot at, like, actually, like, winning something. But, you know, it just – he kind of caught my point, and I was kind of looking back at some of his performances for the season, and I was like, you know, he's really kind of, like, established himself as, like, the best drifter that has a Mustang at this point.
Point number eight, you talk about Cameron Moore. It was nice seeing him back out there. I mean, he's been on a little bit of break there. And he came in with some fire. I think after being gone for a little bit, he really came in and looked pretty solid.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's always that element of the
hometown track, maybe.
Yeah, like it's, you know, where he cut his teeth, where he did his pro-am. But I mean, honestly, that top 32 battle with Castro and Moore is probably like one of my favorite battles of the weekend. Probably my top three.
Yeah,
I understand that it wasn't exactly like the most eye-catching or dramatic battle, but it was like two drivers that I think have very similar skill level and somewhat similar cars that were really just giving it their all. I think it was probably ignored by most because I feel like a lot of people don't pay attention in top 32, but it was kind of crazy, like, to be honest. Like, it even got to the point in the second one more time, they were both pushing so hard, both of them almost spun in like the same spot, and I was kind of like, man, like, how, where did the judges go from here? And you know, they were able to judge the other runs, but I was like, it's kind of crazy. I actually messaged one of the judges after the event. I was like, what would have happened? And he's like, honestly, it probably would have come down to who spun first, right? Yeah. Like, you would just judge the run up until the spin. But I was like, man, but that just kind of reiterates my point, though. It was like, it was that close of a battle that, you know, you were really getting down to the nitty gritty. And I think you don't see that a lot. Usually there's some kind of domination of one driver, or, you know, one driver crashes pushing too hard. So it was just kind of nice to see such a balanced battle.
Well, yeah, and to show you how kind of in neck and neck the judges thought it was, I think this was the first time this season, if I'm right, that we had two one more times, which essentially brings them to three matchups. I don't remember another time this season we've had that.
I feel like there has been, but I can't.
Doesn't matter, I guess. You know,
recall it off the top of my head. Yeah, but it is not something that happens. It's definitely happened in Pro 2 this year a little bit, but I think more from people are doing so poorly they can't find a winner more than like great quality battle.
Yeah, I don't want to admit to it, but I understand what you mean. So, point number seven. This was hard to watch. Chris Forsberg. Essentially, we find out that it was a mechanical issue. Really put a hurt on his season. It was hard to watch. If you saw what was happening, he went to go initiate, and then it seemed like he couldn't, and then all of a sudden he did. He's kind of up on the bank, and then it just, you could just tell he had to shut it down. And then I think they brought it back around. I think he took a competition timeout.
Yeah.
And then he tried to do it and essentially had to shut it down, I think, right after the banks. So not a good look, and certainly a devastating blow for their season.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually spoken to Chris. I've heard through third parties that it was like an electrical throttle body.
Right.
Which, from what the same person told me, that's kind of like a common Nissan issue with that Gen Motors. But it's interesting, you know, I mean, it's kind of a bummer. Like, he won all three of his championships with that basically like Nissan, like core truck motor setup, yeah. Like the VK56. You know, he's really trying to make these Nissan motors work. But I mean, that's honestly what kept him out of the championship chase last year, too. Like, you know, he had to swap back and went to his old car when they built his turbo car. And so, you know, I don't know. Like, obviously, he's won more championships than anyone else in Formula D. So, like, he obviously has talent. He's obviously capable. But, you know, how long can you let these
gremlins?
Yeah. Or like, right. Like, you know, he's trying to be the different guy and run this Nissan setup. And it's like, how long can you like force that issue until it's your competitive spirit takes over and you kind of like take a different path, right?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. So, point number five, no, six. We're up to six. Let's not lose track. Jeff Jones, you write, is growing in confidence with his 370. He looked better than I can remember seeing him in a long while. And if you watched him between, you know, I think he had two different interviews on live stream. And in addition to that, his little dance party that was going on in the back of Matt Field's thing, it kind of seemed like his whole demeanor was much higher. And that was nice to kind of see from him.
Yeah, I mean, it might be one of those things that he had just had a little too much of his energy drink sponsor beverages that day. You know, I mean, seriously, look, talking about it, it's like, I think Jeff Jones is one of those guys who, he lacks two things, I think, to be a championship driver. He lacks funds and he lacks confidence. And he definitely had a lot of confidence this weekend, which was nice. You know, in hearing about that, it wasn't even really a smooth weekend for the team. They had gone through two subframes because they're dealing with aluminum subframes. And just the fact that he, I don't know, like you said, like he's dancing around doing like Fortnite moves. He was like, basically, he got on the live stream and basically was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to kick, you know, Pithior's butt and then I'm moving on. Like, I've already won this top 16 battle with him. And that's not something you commonly see with him. So it's, you know, he's definitely feeling it. He's definitely in his groove. And I hope he can kind of just ride that through Texas and Irwindale and finish the season strong.
Point number five, revenge of Ryan Turek. Turek certainly brought a great performance with him to Seattle. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, Turek is like, I think one of the, Turek's like the opposite or like the antithesis of Jeff Jones. Like, I think Ryan Turek has a lot of confidence most of the time, even though he's like a little softer spoken. Like, I think he really backs his ability to drive. I think he has a lot more funding than Jeff Jones. Like, Turek's still like a privateer team, but he, you know, he's better sponsored, better funded. I think Turek's issue is like, will his car ever work? Like, you know, yeah. It seems like he's always, you know, he's kind of in that same boat a little bit where it's like, I mean, he missed out in Long Beach that one year from like his like drive shaft, like they almost swapped it in 5 minutes, and he's always having electrical issues, it seems like, and turbo issues and this and that. And so when his car works, you know, he's on it. Like, he's probably the best driver that's active in Formula Drift to never win a championship. I think he's come close. He finished, I want to say off the top of my head, either second or third one season when he was driving for Gardella. And so it was just, I don't know, it's just nice to kind of see like the Ryan Turek of old up there fighting in second place. And he needs to figure out something though to beat James Dean. He's 0-4 now, so that's not a good look.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Ryan was saying something about how while they were on break, he was able to diagnose a steering pump issue that they hear about, or that whole thing.
Yeah, I did catch some of that. I mean, I didn't get too much. Honestly, when I hear Ryan Turek's car isn't working, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, like, when is it working? Like, for example, like, Forrest Wang, like, popped a motor, right, missed qualifying. I think we'll touch on that in a minute. But, like, when I hear, like, oh, Wang missed an event from a DNF, I'm like, oh, that's kind of rare. Like, they usually run a pretty, not a tight ship, but, like, it just seems like they do a lot of preventative maintenance.
Right.
His guys are kind of on the ball. He's running a pretty simple, you know, the 2J is kind of more of a low-maintenance setup. But I don't know. When I hear Ryan Turek's car isn't working, I'd be like, well, I was like, I'd be more surprised if you told me it was running great.
All right. Well, a good segue into that is point number four. You wrote car issues from mid-season wear, or was this some of the result of the devastating task that New Jersey may have played on it? You know, listen, I understand your point. The only part that kind of feels, and there was a lot of mechanicals this round, right? But you would think after a six-week hiatus, this shouldn't really be a factor. You would think that some of these guys, if there was a lot of toll put on the car from New Jersey, that at some point with a six-week kind of ability to look over cars, refresh cars, get cars, whatever, that there probably would have been some repair if there was, you know, I don't want to say obvious fixes, but you would think they would run through their cars. They have the time.
You would think, but, you know, I'm obviously not a race car mechanic. I can barely keep my own cars functioning on the road with my own tools and abilities. Right. But, you know, there's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can do all the preventative maintenance in the world, but,
yeah,
you know, you look at Wall and you've got that bank and you've got the, like, the track literally looks like this, right? You're just smashing your car over and over and over again. And it's like, you know, everything could pass a visual inspection, but, like, say that you banged your oil pump and you pushed something up into the, you know, motor. Like, how are you going to know?
Without tearing it apart, do you see it? I understand your point.
You know, I mean, some of these guys only have so many people, so little time where, you know, I don't know. Like, I think it's one of those things where it's like the car looks great and then you get it out on the track and you're like, oh, no, like, this isn't good. And I think just being mid-season two, I think it's just an interesting factor of Jersey coming a little bit later in the season and then, you know, it's just the mid-season, but there was a lot of mechanical and, like, those issues. And so I don't think I have an answer, but it's just something curious to think about. Like, is Wall really that hellish, or is it just kind of a mid-season hiccup?
And it might be a culmination of both. We're kind of right at that point. I mean, I know that Jones had some issue with subframe cracks, and then they seemed to weld it up once they spotted it. And then I guess he ended up needing to kind of use some social media to try to get him a new one just because it, you know, clearly wasn't going to do the trick, even though they had welded it back up. So,
yeah,
I mean, I understand. And, you know, it's hard because there's such a varying degree of, you know, complexity to some of these builds. You know, you look at, you know, a Matt Van Kirk and, you know, it's a heavily modified S chassis car. And then you look at, you know, maybe some of these other ones like the Wardhouse stuff. And I mean, they're full built tubular machines. So there's a big difference there on some of these builds. And so I guess you could argue that is the case for some of these cars. Maybe that's really that point in the season.
Totally.
Yeah. Let's see. We are on to point three. And Chelsea Denofa steals the show with his chase run. And I think we're talking about his top 16 run with Alex Hebron, right?
Correct.
So what...
Oh, sorry. Yes.
This is your turn.
Correct. Yes. Moving on to point number two. Yeah, I just, you know, what a battle. I think if you go to my top 10 things, I put kind of like a rough time code, I think, of where that is in the event. If you missed it and you want to watch it.
Right.
Chelsea Denofa is really frustrating to me, man, because
such a great driver.
Yeah, he's probably the best chase driver in Formula Drift. You know, some people could probably make an argument for James Dean. But he just can't do all the easy stuff. Like, he just can't make the car qualify. He can't put down these good lead runs. You know, he went wide and I think was like three tires off. And then he whips out the most amazing chase run you've ever seen with, you know, zero Fs given.
Right.
But then it's like all in haste. And it's like, you know, if he could have replicated that chase run three or four more times, like, he should have won that event. Like, hands down. Like, no one was coming close to that. But you got to be able to do the easy stuff as well as the hard stuff, and right now he's struggling with the easy stuff.
You know, I can't help but to think when I watch Chelsea, because he's just so good, I just can't help but to think that there might be some factor to do with this Mustang thing. Not that he doesn't look good in it, not that it doesn't have the power, not that it's not a well-built car, not that there's any one thing, but for some reason I always default back, man, if you just put him back in that BMW, you know, put him back in that 3 Series.
I honestly think overall I think he looks better. I think the problem with his BMW and his own program is, like, he was always bootstrapping stuff to a point that I don't think he was ever going to be able to perform at a high level.
Understood.
I think he's at that high level. It's just, you know, for one reason or the other, he can't put all the pieces together at one time.
I mean, Vaughn's not exactly having the best season either. I mean, they're kind of neck and neck with each other. So, I mean,
that is true.
you know, listen, it's, and I don't think, and I'm not saying that to constructively or, you know, critique or put point fingers on one thing. I certainly don't know. I mean, I'm not the guy that should throw any stones in a glass house, but when you look at the obvious, you're like, oh, well, maybe. So,
right.
Point two, man, I don't know. I mean, I didn't even see this stuff. You're talking about Daigo hints at a U.S. return. I mean, I did your little translation. I see what you mean, but I don't know. Does that mean he wants to, or does that mean he might be?
I don't know. I mean, that seems to be one of the rumors circulating. I mean, I'll admit, for my top 10, it's kind of one of my weaker ones.
right. I mean, just to wait, I just want to get, before we get into it, you translated his quote, which obviously is in Japanese.
Right. I pasted the Facebook translation.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. I trust Zuckerberg. He says, I'd like to run in America again. I miss it. Which could mean that he's thinking about coming back, or it could just mean, hey, in the moment of watching some things, it was nice to be there.
I think, okay, I will say this. With a little bit of insider information I tend to have, I think that he is making some form of an attempt to return. I think the biggest issue at this point is he's no longer on Achilles. This is speculation, but told to me from people who I trust with their information. He basically went to a different tire company. While with that tire company, that tire company's full intention was to join Formula Drift, and for one reason or the other, it didn't work.
Right.
And so I think it's like a no man's land thing. I think he's enjoying the deal he has and some things, but, you know, there was some drama in D1 last weekend. Once again, being told to me from a third party, but like one of the sponsors pulled out mid-event, just like left, and apparently he's not returning.
I don't know.
So I just heard about that because it seems like there was some implication that maybe they might slide over to FG Japan and bring their drivers and things. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, D1 is not what it was when we were younger. You know, I'm sure Daigo would like to compete with the best drivers in the world, which I think without question is, you know,
Formula Drift.
What Formula Drift is. And yeah. I'm sure he's watching James Dean steamroll over some guys, and he's like, man, I'd love to run my SC430 right into his door.
Right. Fair enough. And I guess bringing us down to point one, James Dean wins again. I don't want to say anything like, I watched him. He deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot to say about that one. I think the thing I find most frustrating is, like, I think at this point there's like this aura, like James Dean kind of annoyed me last year with his chase runs. Like he was like passing the front of the lead car with his chase car. He's definitely toned that down. I think he's more like driving within the rules, which, you know, I'm sure some people appreciate, but
right.
It's, I don't know. There's just this thing where it's like, I think at this point it's like for half these drivers, it's like more mental than anything. Like basically like you go through his runs this year and it's like, dudes just are like trying to push so hard. They're like flying off the course or crashing. And I wish someone will get their stuff together and take them down. But you know, it's not like it's going to happen. If he podiums again in St. Louis, I mean, you can pretty much just write him down as the second ever back-to-back Formula Drift champion.
Yeah, you'd have to have a lot of mishap in the last couple events at that point
for it to be. Yeah, I mean, it might honestly get to the point where I think he could mathematically be victor by Texas, which I'm not sure, but I don't think we've ever mathematically gone into Irwindale without someone else being able
to take
to win the championship. So that could be interesting.
Formula Drift doesn't have any rule that says that to be a champion, you have to compete in every single round or qualify in every round or anything like that, right?
Nope.
Okay. So if the math does it, it's over.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll just be, you know, we lost Irwindale, we got Irwindale back, you know, the same old drama, but I think it'll really be like a kick in the Irwindale teeth if James Dean basically wins the championship in Texas and it's like, oh, well, we're back again. But, you know, the championship's already won. I mean, I don't think that's good in any sport or any like racing series if like you've decided the championship, you know, before the season has ended, obviously.
Yeah, pretty anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought overall, I thought Seattle was an exciting round. You know, what's interesting, I think that just like Atlanta, I think the Atlanta fans are cool. I think Seattle fans are really cool too. I think there's a lot of good vibes there. You've been to Seattle?
Many times, yeah. I went the first year. I actually only missed, like, I think they've done Seattle 11 years now, 12 years, 12 years. I think I've only missed like two or three this right. year being one of those.
I enjoy the event. I think it's a cool event. I think the, you know, having the Pacific Northwest represented, it's such a good drift community.
It's a strong car market in general, which is surprising.
Why?
Why? I mean, isn't it like raining and snowing like 335 days out of the year?
Gotta have something to do.
I mean, I guess.
You have anything else you want to say about Seattle? Any?
I don't think so. I mean, see you in St. Louis. Like, let's get it moving.
On. Yeah,
I'm ready for Matt Van Kirk on the podium, baby. Or, you know, I'll give some love to Kevin Lawrence. I'm ready for Kevin Lawrence on the podium.
Honestly, I really think, first off, real quick, because we can. So Kevin Lawrence, this was the round that they built a 3.2 liter RB stroked motor, and he clearly had the power. I mean, if you watched him when he would, the car would lunge. I mean, he would really make up some ground pretty quick, and that was nice to see from him. I you know, if he can just put it together, I really think a lot of what's going on with Kevin, and again, I'm speaking without having any information, so I'm just talking out of my rear, but I really think it's mental. I think that he's just got to gain seat time. He's got to get comfortable. He's got to be able to go out there with enough confidence to be able to do it. Because I know Kevin, and if you know Kevin in the sense of, you know, following his driving style, he's an aggressive driver. And to be honest with you, he does have the skill to compete there. Absolutely. It's just a matter of you got to put it together and you got to bring it to the show. You can't just have it when the spotlight's kind of not on.
Totally.
You know, I think he's there, and I really welcome the day when he, you know, gets everything kind of clicking together.
Well, yeah, I also think it's his first event with a new motor. I mean, you know,
no,
let's not beat the guy up too much. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm not beating him up at all. I'm just talking about a season in retrospect, even regardless of the motor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think he has moments where you look at him. I mean, obviously, a lot of them are in lead runs where you're kind of setting the tone. I think his chase runs are the things that, you know, which, you know, you can completely understand. There's a lot of things going on there when you're in the chase run, especially if you might have been slightly underpowered or whatever it may be. But
it's also the hardest thing to practice.
Right.
1,000%. That's why that goes back to the whole issue with Chelsea, where it's like, I'm like, he can do the hardest part the best.
Right.
And then he can't do the rest. So it's like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something else to consider. Like, tandem practice obviously takes a lot of moving parts. And then if you want to be tandeming at people with your level, I mean, there's only so many people you can even get that practice time like in with.
Right. It's been exciting to watch Matt Van Kirk. I see him getting better and better every round. Knowing exactly how his car is set up, you know, with the power issue and with a lot of other issues. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to his episode of the podcast that we just recorded. It's episode 5. He breaks down exactly how his car is built, and it would absolutely shock you. I mean, junkyard stock 2JZ, you know, stock rear diff, a lot of stock parts. I mean, man, it's like really hard to think that if you just put him in a much more competitive car with all the parts, you know, and that's financial, not by choice. You know, people have to understand how expensive it is to run these programs. So,
yeah.
You know, to know what he's working with and how well he's competing on that stage, and he keeps drawing some really big matches every single, like, you know, for all his top 32s.
Yeah, it's been cool.
You know, hopefully he finishes out with his rookie of the year. I'm really excited to see what he looks like next year, especially if there's a possible platform change. We talk a little bit about that in the episode too. So it'll be a lot of great things. It's really been exciting ride to kind of stay up with Matt Van Kirk.
Yeah, totally, man. I'm excited.
I guess that's it. Now completed one of the worst audio quality editions of our podcast ever. I have
you
noises.
Think so?
I have noises coming out of everywhere. I don't even know. I'm hoping that when we get done with this, it's just in my earphones.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, we can always do round 2 if need be.
All right. Joey, why don't you tell them where to find you out there on Instagram?
You can find me. It's just my name, Joey Redmond, Redmond. I'm probably not going to post anything you would like to see other than some ugly rims, some travel pictures, and maybe some photos of my old Mercedes. But, I mean, hey, if you want to give me a follow, I won't be upset.
Right, and if you want to check out him going all over the world, because he certainly travels more than anybody I've ever met, that's the place to be. All right, that's a wrap. For more info on the podcast, head over to koenigwheels.com/podcast. If you've been enjoying these podcasts, please subscribe. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and the full video episodes are always on our YouTube page at Koenig Wheels USA. You can also catch us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at Koenig Wheels USA. That's it. We're out of here. Peace.